It is our joy to present to you a conference from the third series of retreat conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Father Hardin is a professor of theology and is well known as an author, lecturer, and retreat master. In the following conferences, Father treats of many topics of present-day interest to any Catholic and to anyone. They will prove to be of assistance to everyone sincerely trying to live a Christian life in today's world, whether he be layman, religious, or priest. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, Religious Life and the Eucharist, the Real Presence. Father Hardin.
In the present conference, we shall address ourselves in general to religious life and the Eucharist, with particular stress on the real presence. It seems hardly necessary to explain, and much less defend, the importance of the Eucharist in the religious life. We know historically that the earliest religious groups in the Church used to reserve the Blessed Sacrament, and indeed, it was the reservation of the Blessed Sacrament by the ancient hermits that first began the development of doctrine in the Church, from the Eucharist being mainly the sacrifice and the sacrament to being the source and object of adoration. We know that the ancient fathers of the Church, for example, Augustine and Anselm, taught that without the daily reception of the Holy Eucharist, it would be impossible to have consecrated virginity in the Church without daily reception of Holy Communion. There could not be consecrated virginity in the Catholic Church. In the 16th century, during the Protestant Reformation, among other spokesmen for the Church, was St. Robert Bellarmine, who wrote extensively analyzing what happened to the Church. He said that the decline in the Church, the massive defection from the faith, was due in large measure to the neglect of the Eucharist, including its neglect among religious. He further said that the Church would have a renaissance, including a renaissance of the religious life, only if the Eucharist were reinstated to its proper dominant role, especially in religious communities. Among many descriptions of religious life which we could give, I would suggest that religious communities are the principal custodians and witnesses of the Eucharist. Most recently, Pope Paul VI, in his apostolic exhortation, explicitly stated that the Eucharist must be the unqualified center. And having struggled with the Latin, that's the best translation, the unqualified center of every religious community. No wonder so many communities of wavering, faltering, am being phased out of existence, where the Eucharist is the unqualified center, there you will have a vital community. Where that is not true, the community inevitably, ineluctably, will wane and in time will die. So much for the background, just to remind us of the transcendent importance of the Eucharist in religious life. Importance, do I say? Indispensability. No Eucharist, no religious life. Strong devotion to the Eucharist, strong religious life. The one is a condition and barometer of the other. That is propaedeutic. My plan for this conference will be, first of all, to make some affirmations regarding the religious life, which will serve us for our three conferences on the Eucharist. The present one stressing the real presence, the second, Holy Communion, and the third, the sacrifice of the Mass. Here are some affirmations, platitudes if you wish, but we're living in an age when we've got to repeat platitudes. People are forgetting them. First of all, whatever else the religious life means, and it means many things, it means the practice of the evangelical counsels. Secondly, religious life, whatever else it means the practice of Christ-like charity in a community. And religious life surely is a life of self-sacrificing apostolic service, including the most contemplative communities. Must be apostolic through self-sacrifice. So you see, we have the stage set for the life of the councils being made possible and fruitful through our devotion to the real presence, our practice of Christ-like charity being ensured through Holy Communion, and our life of self-sacrifice, obtaining the grace we so much need by joining our sacrifices with the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross and in the Mass. Of course, each division of the religious life overlaps with the other two, as each aspect of the Eucharist, presence, communion, and sacrifice, overlaps with the others. One demands the other two. Nevertheless, since we've got to divide even things of the Spirit, which are not naturally divisible, well, I am hereby dividing things of the Spirit. So we shall concentrate on the real presence and the significance of our devotion to the real presence in living out our life of the councils. In order to appreciate what the real presence means, and you know there's all the difference in the world between, say, intellectually being able to define something and even being able to explain something which we believe, between that and appreciating what we define or even what we believe. The purpose of all meditation ultimately is to grow from sheer knowledge or even faith to an experience appreciation. What then is the real presence which we are bidden to appreciate? Clearly, everything depends on the two words, presence and real. We know something about presence. We know it means a relationship. We know that something can be actually there, objectively present, without our being exactly spiritually or psychologically or responsively present to that, or in this case, the one who is there. And the second term, of course, is real. What's real about it? What's more real than other presences? So we begin. Whose presence are we talking about? Well, somehow, clearly it is God's presence. So we begin by asking ourselves a number of questions. In order to begin to appreciate what the real presence means, we have got to go back in historic or prehistoric imagination to before God made the world. Where was God before he made the world? Actually, that question is meaningless. Because we cannot speak of where until the world came into existence. Before he made the world, God was, if you want to use the word, where God was. God simply was. We begin to intelligibly speak about where was God once he made the world? Then the answer is easy. Where was he, sister? Everywhere where there was any creature. And it means literally everywhere. Not only in terms of distance or expansion, but in terms of intensity, God has to be wherever anything else but God exists. Now we ask another question. Suppose God had not become man, had the incarnation not taken place, would God have been in the world? Was he in the world before the incarnation? Would he have remained in the world had there been no incarnation? Of course. So God was present in the world before he became man. But did something happen when God took on flesh of His Virgin Mother? Was God present in the world before He was conceived in her womb? Yes. Was He present once He became incarnate? Yes. Was there a difference once He became incarnate? Yes. What's the difference? Before He became incarnate, God was in the world as God by His infinity, penetrating all created being by His almighty power. And except for that penetration, the world would have lapsed into the nothingness from which it came. But the moment God became incarnate, He began, and that's the verb, He began to be present in the world, not only as God, but as man. So that child in Mary's womb for 9 months, and once she gave him birth at Bethlehem, was her creator. Now a question. Was there a difference between God's presence in the child that Mary held in her arms and God's presence outside? Yes, because where was God incarnate? In that human being born of Mary. Was God present everywhere as God after the incarnation? Yes. Was God present everywhere as man after the incarnation? No. He was present only within the humanity of that child to whom Mary gave birth. The Eucharist began in the womb of Mary because what might God have done? He might have taken on flesh of His mother, been born, lived for some 30 years among us, suffered and died, rose from the dead, and then returned to His Father, though now as man, and left us only the gospel memory of His having dwelt among us. And a pleasant memory that would have been. But what did He do? He decided to continue His incarnate presence on earth. That's what He did on Holy Thursday night. When He changed the elements of bread and wine into Himself, so that He literally held Himself as the Father, say, in His own hands, and gave to the apostles and their successors the power to do the same. Though He left us in His visible form, Jesus is with us on earth. It is as simple and as awful as that. When Pius XII, just before his elevation to the papacy, gave the keynote address at the International Eucharistic Congress in Budapest, just shortly before the communist takeover, he pleaded with the tens of thousands of people there gathered to be as devoted to Jesus in the Eucharist as they would be to Christ if he was among them in visible form, because, he said, though Christ really rose from the dead and truly ascended into heaven, he never left us. I have never forgotten that, and what that has meant in my priesthood. He's with us. Consequently, the Eucharist as presence is Jesus in our midst. Is there any difference then between Christ's presence in the Eucharist and his presence in heaven at the right hand of his heavenly Father? Any difference? None. The only difference is in us, in that we believe he is here. Oh, he's here, but we don't see him face to face. What then is the reality? The reality is, as the Church is defined at the Council of Trent, when this mystery of our faith was questioned and denied, we believe it is the totus Christus, the whole Christ. His divinity, of course, but let's get this clear. God would have been on earth even if there had not been an incarnation. It is the humanity which is the raison d'etre of the real presence. And how we need to hold on to this faith and pray and sacrifice, that especially priests might retain their clear, unqualified faith in the real presence. That's the reason for the priesthood, many other reasons. This is the fundamental one, that those undeservedly empowered by Christ, who are priests, might enable us to have the Savior with us, no less than he was among his contemporaries. You see, sisters, we are contemporaries of Christ. How's that? But you know that contemporaneity is not only chronological, it is also spiritual. Because what good is it to have Christ in our midst, that we are de facto his contemporaries, unless we realize it? And we're going to come back to this theme of presence more than once. That Christ, he is with us. But he wants us to be with him. And on that, of course, depends so much of our religious life. But behind that faith stands our deep realization of the fact that there is no difference, zero, between Jesus in heaven and Jesus in the Eucharist. Some time ago, I gave a lecture to an ecumenical gathering in Chicago. Many, perhaps most of the audience, were Protestants. I gave one of my standard lectures to mixed groups. After the lecture, there were questions from the audience. A fine lady in one of the first rows spoke up and she said, "Father, I like what you said, but I have one problem. What's the difference between what you believe and what I believe? It seems to me that everything you said, I agree with. Don't we have the same faith?" Well, naturally, I'd ask her, "Lady, what's your faith?" She said, "I am a Southern Baptist." Well, I told her, I am complimented, because many Southern Baptists, whom I know, have a deep faith. However, though I'm sure that much of what we commonly believe, we share together, let me ask you a few questions, if you don't mind. "Oh," she said, "sure. Do you believe that God became man?" "Yes." "Do you believe that Jesus is the natural Son of God?" "Oh, yes." "Do you believe that Jesus, the Son of God, who became man of his virgin mother?" They believe in the virgin birth. "Do you believe that he rose from the dead and ascended into heaven?" "Oh, sure I do." Now be careful how you answer the next question. "And where is Jesus now?" "Oh," she said, "he's in heaven." "Only in heaven?" I asked. "Why, sure," she said. "He went to heaven, didn't he?" "Yes, he went to heaven indeed. But you see, that's where your faith and mine differ so immensely. With you, I believe he is in heaven, but unlike you, as a Catholic, I also believe he is still on earth." That's it. That's our faith. So that this reality is the reality of the Incarnation, continued until the end of time, on earth, in the Eucharist.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.